Why has Bill Curry been your hometown Ford dealer for nearly 60 years? It starts with one of the industry's best lifetime warranties for new and pre-owned vehicles, enhanced by 10-year roadside assistance and free maintenance for a year. Also included are nitrogen tire fills, F-150 and Super Duty bedliners, paint and fabric protection, and more. Add an extensive inventory and concierge customer service, and it's easy to see why Bill Curry is still Tampa Bay's first family of Ford. On Dale Mabry, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium.
All right, welcome to the Free Stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com, brought to you by Bill Curry Ford, Week 7 edition, bye week edition, self-loathing, existential crisis, year 3 or 4 in a row edition of the show. Thanks for being here. Every year, there's been one game where it hits you, and it could be later in the season, it could be early in the season. It doesn't necessarily have to do with the standings, but every year there's a game, and I'm trying really hard not to make this week's game be that game, this past week's game, but every year there's a game where it hits you, this isn't going to be a year where any of this matters by the time we get to Thanksgiving. This isn't going to be a year where we're playing important games with ramifications by the time we get to December. This is just going to be another year like so many in the past. And I'm saying it again, I'm trying really hard not to feel like this Panthers game in London was that game, but God Almighty, if there's a game that has made me more upset in recent memory, it's not on my recent memory, I don't remember it. And the Bucks have lost plenty of games. I don't know why. I can't put my finger on why certain ones stand out more than others, as far as ones that just make me infuriated. But this past Sunday stood out, and they've lost four times already this year, let alone all the losses over the past decade, most of them double-digit losing seasons. But either way, every once in a while there's that game. This was that game for me. We're going to talk about it today on the show. Thank you for joining me. If you want to get a hold of me, as always, I love hearing from you guys. My email address is bobbygameday@yahoo.com. You can email me anytime, BobbyGameday, bobbygameday@yahoo.com. Twitter, same thing. Give me a follow, interact, whatever you want to do. You can follow me at Bobby Game Day. The Free Stretch is brought to you by Bill Curry Ford, where they have the best deal going in automobile sales anywhere in this area, anywhere in the state, and that is the lifetime warranty. Unlimited years, unlimited miles. When you buy a car from Bill Curry Ford, as long as you are the owner of it, it could be a few years from now. You know, you come back, the engine blew, they will take care of your engine issues. It is under warranty, just as a condition of having bought it from them. They'll do that, and that's on top of 10 years of roadside assistance. You're not going to need AAA or anything like that because Bill Curry Ford's going to take care of you. And the first year, free service, bring it in for the oil changes. They'll get it done right there at the service center. All of that comes on top of the already transparent online pricing you'll see if you go to the website, BillCurryFord.com. That's C-U-R-R-I-E, BillCurryFord.com. Check it out or go in person. On the lot, a mile and a half north of Raymond James, north of the stadium on Dale Mabry, where they've always been almost 60 years now. It's just north of Hillsboro, that overpass there at Hillsboro and Dale Mabry, and it's on the east side of the road. If you want to ask for Sean Sullivan, my good friend, mention Joe Bucks Fan, mention the Free Stretch, mention me, you'll get the discount, again, on top of the already transparent online pricing. So thank you to them, and so let's talk about Sunday. It's the bye week. We don't have a game coming up. That's probably best. And here we are at 2-4. And, you know, you want to look at big picture versus little picture. Okay, big picture, they're a game off the pace probably of where we thought they'd be. You know, again, you can't go game by game before the season and say win, loss, win, loss. People love doing that, but you can't. But if you had done that, you probably would have thought of wins at home against the Giants. You probably would have said, okay, splitting against Carolina is fine. And you probably would have thought they'd lose over in New Orleans, still have them at home coming up. You probably wouldn't have thought they'd win against the Rams. You probably would have thought they'd have won at home against the 49ers, who are still undefeated as of this recording. So, you know, either way, however you want to slice it, you probably would have thought, okay, 3-3 at the bye week and then go from there. And the Bucs had a chance to do that. In fact, even with this loss on Sunday, if they had made a field goal against the Giants or done some other things before that, they would have been pretty much exactly where we thought they'd be. But I don't care about that because right now we've got bigger problems. And part of it's our fault because we've still been going about this as if, you know, they're right there. It's really close. They're almost on the cusp. And it's games like Sunday that make you realize how far away they really are. So without further ado, and I almost did a reaction show, by the way. You know, sometimes people text me, or not text me, tweet me or email me. Hey, Bobby, you know, you've talked about, and you know, a couple times in the past I've even done it, where instead of my usual Thursday show, I've gone and just done a show right then and there Sunday night or Monday. Just because I can't wait till Thursday, I've got to talk about what just happened, and I call it a reaction show. So I had a few people asking me this past weekend, Bobby, you going to do a reaction show after this display? I mean, what are you going to say? And I almost did one, but honestly, I needed a better topic than what I would have had at the time. If I had done a show on Sunday evening, or if I had done a show on Monday morning or Monday afternoon, the show topic would have been, I hate us. This is all pointless, and really you're just wasting your time by following this team, and you're wasting your time by listening to my show. That would have been the topic of my show, and I didn't really want to go with that. So I said, and this is a general rule I have in life, whether it's, you know, having a fight with my wife or being mad at something, give it a little time. Don't say something mean. Take a few deep breaths, walk away, let it marinate, then come back. If you're still as mad as you were a day later, a few hours later, whatever it is, or a week later, and you still have that vitriol, well then, hey, go for it. But most of the time, like 90-something percent of the time, a little bit of time passes, a few deep breaths come and go, and it takes the edge off things a little bit. So that's what I decided to do, and that's why we're talking about this now instead of last Monday. So how is it that I feel now? Honestly, it's that feeling you get when you should have known better and when in fact you did know better, but then you let yourself stop living in reality for a little bit. And I do this every year and start thinking maybe things were better than they are, maybe things were rosier than they are, and you let yourself get carried away until you got pulled back down into where we are now. And that is where we are now. Here's where we are now. Not where we need to be, and not that close to where we need to be. It's going to take time. And that's why all this trade talk I'm hearing, we're going to get to this later in the show. People want Patrick Peterson. People can't believe Jalen Ramsey got traded and we weren't involved, even though it was two first-rounders. I mean, it's asinine that people think that's the place we're at right now, when it's actually the opposite. I wish we could think of some people to trade to get some high draft picks. But anyway, point is, let's start off with Jameis, because it all comes back to this. And the quarterback is the thing. And if you listen to this show for any amount of time, especially if you go back more than just this season to a couple seasons, you know that I have been an ardent defender of Jameis. I have bent over backwards to give you all the reasons why he can and will continue to get better, how wanting to jettison him is premature, how hard it is to come by quarterbacks in this league, and where else are you going to go if you get rid of him. All that's still true, by the way, but at the same time, it is getting really hard. In fact, it's not even hard. It's you just simply cannot do it, defending what some of the things he is are. I mean, you just can't do it. And I guess what's the most frustrating, you know, you look back at the 2015 draft, and it was either Winston or Mariota, and it was always going to be one of those two guys. Like, it's not like the Bucs made a mistake and took the wrong one, because Mariota isn't any better. In fact, I don't think he's nearly as good as Winston, even knowing what Winston is. And really, the only thing you can maybe argue is that the Bucs should have taken a big package deal for their pick instead of taking Jameis Winston. And I guess, like, the Eagles offered a bunch of stuff. And in hindsight, okay, but the Bucs were in dire need of a quarterback. Dire need of a quarterback, had two, whichever one you wanted, you could argue about, but had two of them sitting there with the number one overall pick. They're taking a quarterback, okay? I mean, that you can say, oh, they picked a bad year to have the number one overall pick. Hey, fine, maybe you can argue that. But looking back, what are you going to do? Not take one of those guys when that's the only thing you need? Well, not the only thing, but the main thing you need? I mean, come on. So, here's the thing with Jameis. This is what's so frustrating to me. You know, you look at Mariota, who got benched this past week and is having plenty of problems of his own. They've both missed some time, Mariota with injuries, Jameis with either injuries or suspension. But they've been in the league the same amount of times, and it happens to work out. They've both played the same amount of games, 62 games, both of them. So Jameis has 100 touchdowns and 68 picks in that time. Mariota's got only 76 touchdowns, 34 behind Winston, but also only 44 picks, 24 behind Winston. So here's the thing with Jameis. Like, the things that make me think he's such a good quarterback and can be so good, the things that he does to put the ball in receivers' hands, to make plays when it looks like there's not a play to be made and things like that, that's the hard part. Like, he does the hard part, the part you can't really teach anybody to do, the part that only a handful of human beings currently walking planet Earth can do. He does those things. The easier, and I don't want to say easy as in anything is easy, because nothing about playing quarterback in the NFL is easy, but the part that should be easy to correct is the part that he cannot seem to overcome in his game no matter what, and that's what's the most frustrating. Look at Mariota. Mariota just, they can't move the ball, okay? They can't score, they can't produce anything. Like, he just doesn't have it, you know? But he takes care of the ball better and all that stuff. Winston can do, again, things that you couldn't teach Marcus Mariota to do no matter who coached him. Winston can do them. He does them. Even in this game against Carolina, he did it a few times. Every week, he makes plays that make me go, yes, this guy, like, this is why we wanted this guy. He can do those things. And yet the part that should be easy, like throwing the ball away, taking better care of the ball in the pocket, things that are really coachable and that aren't something that only a certain small percentage of people can do, that really any competent quarterback should be able to do, that's the part that's holding Winston back. And I guess that's the part that sucked me in, because I keep thinking to myself, hey, yeah, I've always been an idealist, right? I like to think of myself as a realist, and I think I am a realist, but we're all a little idealistic, aren't we? So I look at Jameis and I say, hey, look at all the good things he can do. Let's keep those and just take out the bad stuff. Then he'll be a top 10 quarterback in the league. And it shouldn't be that hard, but it is. The play before the half, you remember the Saints game a couple weeks ago? We were in a 10-10 game. Saints had the ball with a few minutes to go before halftime, and I was hoping the Bucs could just hold them even to a field goal or to nothing. Even 13-10 would have been fine, because points before the half are so important, and it's just such a big deal when you can get them. So the Bucs before halftime this week against Carolina, and they were playing horribly, but yet, you know, they were in the game, and they got the ball. And it was kind of funny because they really had a good chance to go into the locker room if they could do something and get even a field goal, get some points. It was like, okay, we're not that bad of a shape for the second half. And at this point in the game, it was 17-7 Carolina. Like I said, Bucks hadn't played very well, but, you know, Carolina had just kicked off after scoring. Bucks had the ball. And if they could come back and even make it 17-10 at halftime, I would have been happy. The kick was a touchback. And they're down 17-7 with about 6 minutes and change to go in the second half. Or, excuse me, the second quarter, the first half. So, okay, hey, let's take 3-4 minutes here, whatever it is, go downfield, get some points. And they were actually moving the ball. They converted a 3rd-and-8 after they hit Mike Evans for 11 yards. They hit Godwin for, on the next set of downs, they hit Godwin for 9, got the ball toward midfield. Another 13-yarder to Evans, got it to the Carolina 36. You know, they ran the ball semi-successfully, even on first down. Peyton Barber got 4. They hit another one to Mike Evans that got him a first down, and then they were right. I mean, they're on the 22-yard line. There's 2 minutes and 21 seconds to go. It's 1st-and-10 at the Carolina 22. They let that run down all the way to the 2-minute warning. So now, they hit a 10-yard pass. They're on the 12-yard line. They're down 17-7. There's the 2-minute warning. Here is where games get decided. They took a bad sack, but only lost 6 yards at least. And Jameis fumbled and got the ball back. So now it's 2nd and, they lost 3 yards on the fumble too. 2nd and 19 now at the Carolina 21. minute 16 to go. You're still thinking in the back of your mind, hey, maybe they can find a way to get in the end zone here, but I'll take 17-10 at the half. As badly as that first half had gone, I would have been happy with it. Jameis drops back. No one's open. He's holding. He's dancing in the pocket. He rolls out. Still has the ball. People are coming after him. Now they're trying to hurt him. Still nobody's open. Can't find any receivers. Then he rolls even further, right? He's almost on the sideline now. It really is okay. It's second down. It would have been third and 19 from the 21, and your odds aren't great. I know he wanted to get something done on that play, but still, what the hell? Let's toss it away. Nope, I'm going to keep this ball out here up by my ear like I'm ready to make some brilliant pass here to pick up the first down. It's been like 6-7 seconds at this point. He gets hit. Just a swarm of humanity around him eventually is going, even the offensive line, you know, on that play, it actually protected him for a while. But, yeah, they all collapse on top of him. Ball pops out. We fumble. Carolina actually ended up getting a chance to score themselves, and they missed on the free kick. But, I mean, that play infuriated me. And it didn't infuriate me for any other reason than Jameis Winston. I wasn't mad at the line. I wasn't mad at the receivers. That's where a quarterback, and again, this is something that a high school quarterback can do. This isn't even the hard part. That's something where, okay, it's not happening here. Let me get rid of the ball. For him to fumble the football away to Carolina at that point in the game, at that point in that series, is criminal quarterback malpractice. It's one of the shittiest single plays I've ever seen him make, and I literally cannot believe even right now that he did that. And it made me so angry. And I probably shouldn't have been as angry as I was. This is just a game. Nobody's, you know, like I said, nobody's getting a job promotion, or at least none of us as fans. Nobody's getting a job promotion if they win. Nobody's getting fired if they lose. There's not a patient lying on the table whose health outcome depends on what the Bucs can do on this second and 19. But my God, like I cannot believe he's that stupid about certain. I'm not calling him stupid as a human being, and you can hold your comments. But I can't believe he's that stupid on certain plays. What in the hell? You've been in the league 5 years, and I always talk about how young he is, because he is, and he's only a year older, or now a year and a half or so older than Tom Brady was when he made his first ever start. You always hear me throw that stat out there just to illustrate how young Jameis is. But he does have, again, a 62-game body of work now. Throw the ball away, or even just run and get like 3 yards and go out of bounds. Even third and 16 is better than third and 19, whatever. But you cannot fumble it there. And I just, honestly, I felt like an a-hole. One, for getting as upset as I did. And two, for thinking that things actually were getting to be different. I'm still, like even now a few days later, I'm still just completely baffled by that single play. This is one play in the game. I'm not even talking about the interception that he threw to Kuechly, where it looked like Kuechly was a Bucs receiver, like running a route over the middle, and Jameis hit him perfectly in stride, except Kuechly plays for the other team. I'm not talking about that, or even any of the other. He got a couple interceptions that were like on fourth downs downfield, which I know count toward his total, but I don't care about the. I'm talking about that one play. That play pissed me off, and excuse my language the past few minutes, but my God, I mean, honestly, I'm still upset about that. And I want to just grab him. Like, I don't know how Bruce Arians doesn't just grab him by the shoulder pads, like on his chest, and just shake him and say, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing? How could you do that? I could get the quarterback for any local high school, and they would understand not to do that. Okay? So now it's 17-7 at the half instead of 17-10, and it could have been 20-7. Luckily, Carolina missed their free kick. And we don't get points before the half. That could have made that a ball game. And it's just... Ugh. John Romano wrote a column this week in the Tampa Bay Times. Actually, a lot of people wrote columns this week. Martin Fennelly wrote one. Our friend Thomas Bassinger wrote one. But I like Romano's column talking about, you know, maybe the problem, or at least a problem, is that the Bucs have done so much to take care of Jameis Winston and protect him. He says maybe they should do Jameis a favor and stop making excuses for him. And they really have. I mean, they've always... And I'm not saying Arians should say anything publicly, you know, go up on the podium after the game and rip Jameis to shreds or anything. But, you know, they took away his competition this year. They thought it'd be better off. And I thought it was, too, if we didn't have somebody breathing down his neck. They've always talked about, oh, well, this... You know, we didn't do a good enough job blocking. This receiver didn't run the right route, blah, blah, blah. And maybe... And I'm reading Romano's words verbatim right here. You know, maybe... what we haven't tried is what they need to try. He says, this is what happens when you have the potential to be a star. Those around you will do Cirque du Soleil-like maneuvers to make sure you remain on the road to celebrity. Except it hasn't worked for Winston. We can agree on that, right? He's been given free passes for 5 years, still doesn't seem prepared to pay off that debt anytime soon. There's the occasional step forward, then two interceptions backward. I'm still quoting Romano right now. And yet, this isn't the right time to give up on Winston, not mid-season. The Bucs have already gone all in on him for 2019, so it'd be like folding your hand while you still have $21 million in the pot. So what is the answer? He says, maybe it's time to stop coddling, stop making excuses. Maybe it's time Arians grabs Winston by the proverbial lapels, like I just said, and screams what everyone in Tampa Bay has wanted to shout at one time or another in the past few seasons, stop screwing up. Seriously! Like, I don't know what it's like to be an NFL head coach or an NFL position coach or anything like that. I'm not pretending I can. I know how hard it is to try to get through to some of these guys. And I don't know why they haven't, and it's not just this staff. This staff's only had this team for 6 games now, but I don't know why it's been so hard, again, like I said to begin the show, to tell Jameis that what he's doing is phenomenal when he's doing what we know he can do. Just do that and take out the poor decisions. And you might say, oh, well, they come with the territory. If he's going to make those plays where he breaks through the pocket, you know how sometimes the pocket will break down? He'll step forward, like, through the pocket, and then it always, I think his QB rating on these plays is, like, 3,040. Like, he's unbelievable. Whenever he's running forward while he throws it, like, he breaks through, he's, like, approaching the line of scrimmage, and, like, he'll turn his body as he's running and just always hit somebody. Always, it seems like they're open. He puts the ball where it's supposed to be, makes those plays. Maybe you can't have those plays without some of the picks. And I even said before, I'm okay with a few picks. I know he's that type of quarterback. It's fine. I don't mind a pick a game or so where you shake your head up. Well, you know, that's what you get with Jameis. Fine. But that turnover to end the first half, taking away points from us like that, which wasn't even him like making a throw or something, that made me more upset than any interception. And it happens over and over again. And I can't argue anymore. You know, I always used to make fun of my friends who wanted to move on from Winston. I talk about on this show, I talk about how dumb they sounded. I'd be condescending toward them. How do they not see this? This guy's going to be the guy. They're fools. And now, honestly, I owe him an apology. Not that I necessarily agree with them 100%. I don't. But I at least can't argue with what they're saying anymore. Because what they're saying is a perfectly valid stance. And I still hope they're wrong. Romano is right. You know, at this point in the season, we've got another 10 games left, a body of work to keep going on. We don't have any hurry. Let's see what happens. And you know how this stuff goes week to week. One week, and I think Jameis will play better. He always does. Jameis never stays down for long, and he never stays up for long. When he's playing well and you think it's all good and he's finally turned the corner, he just absolutely soils everything. And when he has a game like he did against Cincinnati last year where he got benched, or a game like this one this past Sunday, he'll come right back and he'll be like, okay, that was a good couple weeks there, good response, and you start thinking it's going to be fine again. And it happens over and over. And the pattern, a lot of you are probably thinking or saying out loud to your speakers right now, Bobby, you should have recognized the pattern right now. But the pattern just repeats itself over and over. So it probably will again. I'm not going to argue against it anymore. I can't anymore. But we've got 10 more games. Let's see what happens. And, you know, I talked about, let me go to my Twitter feed real quick. Bobby Game Day, if you want to follow me on Twitter, at Bobby Game Day. Here's my timeline from just the 3 hours of the game. Right after the first pick, I tweeted, that's the problem when all the talk starts to be about we've got to get the ball to this guy or we've got to get it to that guy. I said, just run your offense. If guys are good enough, they'll get their touches. First play of the game, it was clear, you know, oh, hey, this whole Mike Evans thing has kind of become a thing now. Let's address it. Let's hit Mike Evans on the first play and everybody will be happy. Of course, it wasn't there. And yeah, Evans could have come back to the ball a little better. You know, he ran kind of maybe a little lazy cut, which he does. But either way, there was another option. There was a safety valve there we could have thrown it to. Instead, he wings it in there to Evans because we got to get Evans involved. Pick. So there's that. Next tweet was a little bit while later after the Bucs had the ball. It was the play where Vernon Hargraves just had his man, like as Mick Hubert, the voice of the Florida Gators, would say, just quarantined. There was nobody even near the Carolina receiver. And this is inside the red zone. They hit like a 15-yard out, and like Hargraves was just nowhere. So what had happened was the guy got into his route, and then he's ready to break it off for the out. He kind of forearmed Hargraves a little bit, making his cut. And, of course, Hargraves, since he weighs about 115 pounds, just goes flying like 10 yards away, and the guy just turns around and makes an easy catch. And then Hargraves turns to the referee, he wants the OPI, which you see every DB do all the time. I tweeted, Hargraves, shut the bleep up and don't go flying 10 yards when a guy nudges you. Terrible. That was probably a little harsh on Hargraves. I was angry, okay? I'll cop to everything I say, right or wrong. But yeah, I mean, the guy, you know, they're not going to call it because the guy didn't extend his arms, but then the guy gave a little nudge to Hargraves out of his cut, which is what you're taught to do as a receiver. And the good ones can, you know, when they sink their hips to get into that cut, they can flick that elbow or that forearm a little bit. And you're supposed to just battle through that as the DB and not, again, Hargraves stumbled away like, you know, a million yards and he's nowhere to be found when the pass is completed. Pissed me off. Then the McCaffrey touchdown, which was a TD, by the way. Nobody stopped the football. They stopped the man, but he's allowed to reach his arms out. He did. And then the tweet after the Jameis turnover. Jameis, your OL sucks, but act like you actually know what the hell you are doing in your fifth season in this league. I mean, what the bleep, dude. I tweeted that right after the Jameis red zone fumble. And then finally, and I think this one, I don't remember, but I think this one was after we got four, okay? Four false starts. Two of them were on the same play, so it was actually three flags. But three consecutive times we get false start penalties off of a punt. I mean, honestly, I've never seen anything that piss poor. And I tweeted this. I said, I hate us. I just really viscerally hate us. The offense, the defense, and most of all the uniforms, everything. That was my tweet. Like, I hated my own football team in that moment more than I've ever hated any rival or anything like that. I detested the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in that moment. And it's only because I care so much. But we're talking about a punt here, not something where you need to fire off the ball or something. Where, I mean, it's a punt. And we get three false starts in a row. And I still have no idea how that happens. And then finally, and this was after, I think, maybe the Bobo Wilson punt or one of the other interceptions or what, I can't even remember at this point. I tweeted, I don't know if I have anything left to give for a little while. I'm broken. Why do we get excited for this every week, every year? Not that I'm changing. Where else am I going to go? And again, it's true. I'm not going anywhere. I'll be doing this show on Joe Bucks Fan as long as they let me. And even after I'm not doing a show, I'll be a Bucks fan. I was a Bucks fan way before I ever became a talk radio host or a podcast host. And I'm not following the team just because I do it like as a job. I follow the team because I care. And I'll always do that, whether I'm working in media or not. So I'm not going anywhere. But my God, like, it's just, I can live with not having good enough players and just getting beat. But the Bucks do so many things that are just so preventable. Like, it's just prevent. That's the buzzword for me. I hate preventable things. And this is not just sports, but it is the same thing with my kids, or same thing when I look at political stuff or whatever, and I see things happening in the world. You know, some things are going to happen, but man, some stuff is just so preventable, and it's just so, so stupid when it happens. The Jameis fumble was one of those. The false starts in Carolina almost scoring was one of those. I mean, it goes on and on and on and on. And that's the most frustrating part of the whole thing. And so this is kind of a depressing Twitter timeline, although I'll say this for the free kick for Carolina. It brought back some good memories. When I played high school football at Jesuit, see, I know about free kicks because one happened in a game I was playing in. This is in 1996, my junior year at Jesuit. And I played special team. At this point, I wasn't playing that much, as opposed to my senior year when I also didn't play that much. But my junior year, I was playing special teams, and that was pretty much it. We played Lake Wales in the first round of the playoffs at Jesuit over there on Himes Avenue. We're down 31-14 with less than 4 minutes left. This is the wildest sporting event to this day that I've ever been a part of or witnessed. So we're down 31-14. We score. We get an onside kick. We score again. Now it's 31-28. There's still only like 45 seconds left. We scored twice in like 2 minutes. And now this time we've got our timeouts. We're not going to onside kick. We try and stop Lake Wales. So they run the clock all the way down, but they can't get it quite down. They get it down to like 5 seconds. They punt on the final play of regulation. And it doesn't have to be the final play of regulation. You can do a fair catch kick after any fair catch. Teams only do them usually on the final play or close to the final play of regulation because you don't have time for anything else. So a teammate of mine named Berlin Peace, if you're out there, Berlin, or if anybody knows him, he'll remember. A teammate of mine, Berlin Peace, fair caught the ball right on top of the midfield logo on the Lake Wales punt, and time had run out. And Coach Bob Wiener, who's now the head coach at Plant, who was my position coach at Jesuit, he was the wideouts coach and special teams coach, he and a guy named Jeff Babcock, our backup kicker at the time, who went on to kick at Colorado State, they're the only two guys that knew the rule, and they said, hey, call a fair catch, Berlin, and we'll go ahead and kick this from midfield. So he did that. Dave Wasilewski, again, if you're out there, Dave, you remember this. Dave Wasilewski got to use the kickoff tee. I guess the high school rule is different. And he got to use the actual kickoff tee. Smacked that ball down at the 50-yard line, 60 yards. But again, he had the kickoff tee, so it wasn't a place kick. And it was so weird. It was like a technical foul in basketball. There was nobody else on the field except for him, the referee standing behind him, and the ball on a kickoff tee on the midfield logo. And he has to kick it through the goalpost with no time on the clock. And if he makes it, we get to go to overtime. And everybody in the stands on both sides is just screaming. Our sideline's screaming. Lake Wales, they're all screaming. And Dave Wasilewski, one of the most stone-cold, just cast-iron nuts displays I can ever remember. Just him alone in the middle of that field, absolutely stuck the ball. I mean, it would have been good from like 70 yards. He just drilled a kickoff. And Dave went on to kick at UF and then Northwestern. And just absolutely hammered it. We go to overtime. We lost in overtime, 37-31. But wow, that was cool. Much cooler than the Joey Sly thing. Although, again, with people on the field, even though it's a free kick, it didn't seem as cool. They should make the guy just be there on the field, just alone with the ball, just like they do in high school. And so that was something interesting that happened before halftime. Of course, they didn't score on it. And then the second half, at that point, I think when the Bucks lost me for good was when they attempted the field goal on like 4th and 2 or something, even though they needed 3 scores and kicking a field goal did not change the fact that they needed 3 scores. Oh, and they burned a timeout before the field goal just to blow a timeout in the small chance that this actually became a football game. They wanted to make sure they put themselves at a further disadvantage. And I just said, you know what, I can't care about this anymore. And I kind of shut down after that. There was the Bobo Wilson thing, who's since been released. He fumbled a punt. And even before the fumble, I mean, Bobo Wilson's returns this year, he never gets more than like 3 feet, like, right? I mean, has he gotten more than like a couple yards on any punt return than anybody could remember? Not to kick him on his way out the door. But the Bucks will try out punt returners here in the bye week, I guess. I don't know. So I think they're going to play well against Tennessee. We'll talk more about that on next week's Free Stretch, but I actually think they'll play well. That's how these things work. They'll reel us back in. They'll be 3-4. We'll start talking again about how Bobby said 4-4 all along would have been good through the first 8 games, and they have a chance to do that with wins over Tennessee and Arizona. And I'm not trying to pee in anybody's parade, but even when that happens, and I think it could, I think they could be 4-4. I want y'all to remind me. You can email me, bobbygameday@yahoo.com. You can tweet at me at bobbygameday, or if you see me in person, just tap me on the shoulder and remind me that I'm being a complete moron and that we already know this team's ceiling is probably 8-8, maybe 7-9, and it ain't going to happen again this year, which I think I said before the season started. But yet, again, we win a couple games, and I'm just like everybody else. I want to believe that, hey, maybe, you know, every year there's a team, the Bucks, just absolutely destroy. Even though the Bucks aren't very good, there's always a team that's worse, and the Bucks will destroy them. And it'll seem like the two teams are going in opposite directions, and they are, only it's the different directions that you think. 2 years ago, Bucks and Bears, both crappy teams, but the Bucks just hammered the Bears. Remember that game? They just beat the Bears at home like they were, just beat them like a drum. It's like, okay, we suck and the Bears suck, but we're getting better, and the Bears are just spiraling down the drain. They're going to just pass off into irrelevance. Well, the Bears the next year were playing in the playoffs and should have been in the divisional round had it not been for that weird missed field goal by Cody Parkey. And they're, to this day, better, although they're still not a great team. They were the ones on the upswing. Last year, took my son to the game, the 49ers. Again, the Bucks weren't very good either, but the 49ers were even worse. Bucks beat them handily, in control of the game the whole time. Yeah, you know what? We're not that good, but we're going somewhere. The 49ers, they suck. They're in irrelevance. They're just going to keep living life in the doldrums for years to come. Now they're, what are they, 6-0 or 5-0, and here we are. I wonder who will beat this year by like three touchdowns while going 5-11, who that team will also go 5-11, except next year they'll be 11-5 and we'll still be 5-11 again, because this just never stops happening. So I know this show's been a stream of consciousness rant pretty much all. And you listen, there's plenty of blame to go around. All right, when you lose two offensive linemen like they did, and I tell you this all the time too, when a unit doesn't look very good and then somebody gets hurt and you're like, oh, well, that's okay. We needed to make a change anyway because they suck. There's a reason players who start even when they don't look like they're that good, and there's a reason why the guys who aren't playing. So they lost Kappa and Dotson this week, all right? And this is a line that was already a little bit shaky. And it's like, okay, well, whatever. These two backups are competent. I'm sure it'll be fine. No, it wasn't fine, okay? The offensive line got destroyed. And Earl Watford and Josh Wells, I'm not ripping them specifically, but I'm saying you lose two starting offensive linemen and you put two backup offensive linemen in there, your results will be not as good. Even if the prior results were not good to begin with. So that happened. The defense probably didn't play as poorly as we want to make it seem like they did. You know, when you turn it over the way the Bucs did, I mean, Carolina had scoring drives. I think they had three or four drives that were like under 20 yards. They had one where they scored where they didn't gain any yardage and they kicked a field goal, and a couple touchdown drives that were like, you know, 20 yards, 25 yards, whatever. You know, so that these short fields make a difference. Turnovers, takeaways, giveaways, they make a difference. And I'm not excusing the Bucs defense by any stretch, but you know, you just can't turn the ball over the way the Bucs did. And the Bucs defense could have done a better job. The 99-yard touchdown drive after Bradley Pinion actually pinned a punt down deep for once, and our defense just lets them go right down the field. That was really, really, really disconcerting. So again, plenty of blame to go around. Looking for positives, like Carl Nassib was good. If everybody had the energy he had in this game, I think the result could have been a lot different. He was getting some pressures from the outside. Vita Vea is a stud. And even in this game, he was a stud. I know not all of you are Twitter people, but you don't have to be on Twitter. Go on Twitter. Go to Brian Baldinger's Twitter account. He breaks down film for a lot of different players around the league. But he did another little piece on Vita Vea just from the Carolina game, and he's got some real good like isolation shots, slow motion showing, hey, you don't always notice this on TV, and I don't either, but saying, hey, watch Vita Vea on this play. Vea is an absolute physical force of nature. And he's still getting things figured out. I mean, he's still got only a handful of games as a starter in this league. But, you know, there's a reason the Bucs' run defense is number one in DVOA. Their pass defense is in the 20s, but their run defense is number one. And it's not just on running downs. I mean, Veda's good on passing downs too. But watch what Baldinger put up there. Go to his Twitter feed and look at that film. And Veda's just taking one hand, just moving the center off him with one hand, reaching around, getting the quarterback with the other. Just really, really solid play. And together with Sue up front there, if you're looking for bright spots, there's some there. And otherwise, it's, you know, I look at this team and I look at what people have been saying this week, and everybody wants to make deals. Everybody's like, hey, let's make... I actually heard people say, I can't believe Jalen Ramsey went to the Rams. The Bucs need a CB1. And why aren't they making moves like that? Look, man, no one ever wants to hear it. And they especially don't want to hear it when it's a repeat of what they've been hearing already. But this ain't the year. If you're a player or two away and you're right there and you think, hey, we need to upgrade this one spot, maybe you do trade two first-round picks for a guy like Jalen Ramsey. Rams were in the Super Bowl last year. I'm not saying they're going again this year, but they're at least a team that can entertain those notions, okay? For the Bucs, they need so much help in so many different places to trade away high draft picks. It'd be crazy. I mean, it'd be, even by Jason Light standards, it'd be crazy, okay? And let me tell you something else. I heard Patrick Peterson's name keep coming up. First of all, he hasn't played this year. He's 29 years old. He's only got 1 year left on his contract. Next year, he's playing for over $10 million, whatever it is. And then he's a free agent. And you want to give up high picks for him. It's crazy because you think that's going to make the difference this year. You think we're going to go from 2-4 and we're going to storm back, go like 10-6, you know, go 8-2 in our last 10. go to the playoffs, go to the Super Bowl. Like, that's not happening. And I hate that as much as you do. I hate it. I hate when we can already say that this early in the year. But the Bucks need to keep building, and it's going to take patience, and it's going to take probably more days like this past Sunday. And again, I get why nobody wants to hear that. But, you know, a perfect example of this is Vita Vea. How bad do they need offensive line help? Quentin Nelson. Remember they missed on Quentin Nelson by one pick? If they hadn't had Quentin Nelson go to the Colts in front of them, I think they would have stayed at the 7 pick a couple years ago, not traded down, and let the Bills get Josh Allen, and probably just taken Nelson with their pick. Instead, Nelson won a pick before them. That really hurt because we really, to this day, need guys like that up front. And instead, we traded down. The Bills traded up to get Josh Allen. We got their pick a few spots later, like 11th or whatever it was, and then some other stuff. And we took Vita Vea. Well, guess what? We needed Vita Vea, too. Like, you can't build a team with one first-round draft pick. You know, you can't. I don't care how good the pick is. It's one guy. Now you got to go get more. So they should be stockpiling picks, not trading them away for guys who are stopgaps to just help a 2-4 team go 9-7 instead of 6-10, which one guy wouldn't even make that much of a difference. That's generous. It'd be helping an 8-8 team be 8-8, basically, instead of 6-10 or 7-9. And it's just not worth it. It's not worth it. And then people say on the other side, well, hey, let's trade O.J. Howard then. You want to get stockpiling picks, Mr. Pick Getter? Get on board with that. I'm not on board with that either. Because first of all, he wouldn't get that much. And second of all, O.J. Howard, I mean, there's things he can improve about his game, but he's out there for more than 80% of the snaps he is playing. It's not like they're not using him. They're not targeting him as much, and there's things they probably should be focusing more on Howard and Cameron Brate than they are on these third and fourth receivers. I'm tired of hearing about Scotty Miller. I'm tired of hearing about, you know, all these other guys. You know, give me Godwin, give me Mike Evans. You know, you occasionally go a little deeper than that with your receivers, but then the tight end should be factoring more. That's something the coaching staff needs to figure out. Trading O.J. Howard, first of all, wouldn't get, if you can get a first round pick for O.J. Howard, then fine, do it. But that ain't what you're going to get. So I don't see the point in that either. JPP, back this week, maybe. He's been working out during the bye week. I don't know if he'll play against Tennessee, but I think they might want to try. Let's see if that makes a difference, because the pressure we got. I mean, you look at Kyle Allen. That's another thing I tweeted about on the during the game the other day. You know, we're all here ripping our hair out, those of us that have hair, with Jameis Winston. And it's kind of funny because you watch Kyle Allen come in, make a few plays, generally does enough to not F the game up for his team. And this is just some guy that they just have. Like, it's not even some guy they made any plans around. They just used him when they felt like, you know, they had to turn to him after Cam Newton got hurt. And he comes in, and he's a competent quarterback who gives him a chance. And that's all you need sometimes. And look, he has tons more time than Jameis. That was part of the problem. We got no pressure. Pressure is everything. Even before the secondary, you can rip the secondary all you want. You've got to get pressure. And in the passing defense right now, you know, pass defense isn't just your secondary. Pass defense is an 11-guy thing. And our front seven isn't doing jack. And our front four, I know that, you know, we blitz more than we used to. Whatever they're doing, it ain't getting there. And that makes guys, there's a reason why all these backup quarterbacks who are backup quarterbacks come in and beat the Bucs routinely. It happened with Teddy Bridgewater. It happened with Kyle Allen. It's been happening over the year. I think we're like 0 for our last 9 games against a backup quarterback. And we might get one against Tennessee, although at this point they're interchangeable. But technically, Tannehill's the backup, although they're starting him now. Bridgewater, all that. There's a reason why these guys get off on us. It's because they have time. You pressure backups, you'll be fine. They don't get any pressure. That's not going to get fixed overnight. That's going to take multiple draft picks and multiple years probably to fix. So you see what we're up against now, okay? Vernon Hargraves is a fine nickel corner. He's not a number one corner. So there's another personnel deficiency right there. All right, if he's playing, I'm not saying he shouldn't be on the team, but he's a fine nickel corner. But now that he's number one, he's not good enough to do that, number one. Number two, now you're trying to, Sean Murphy Bunting, by the way, has just taken over. MJ Stewart has slowly been reshuffled back, and now Murphy Bunting's the nickel guy. And I'm not trying to rip any of these guys individually. I'm just saying we are deficient personnel-wise. And a good coaching staff can get around some of those things, and get the most out of what they have, but it ain't gonna be enough for us to be truly what we want the Bucks to be. And I guess all that just kind of came crashing down. It's my job, not as a fan, but as a podcast host, to tell you that stuff even before it happens. And a lot of times I get caught up in it too, and I think, okay, hey, you know, maybe we can do something with this. But guys, and again, I think they might win a couple. They might beat Tennessee. They might beat Arizona. Neither of those teams are that formidable. They might be 4-4, and then they'll start up again. Hey, Bobby, don't count them out. You never know. 4-4, schedule gets easier. I think 9-7 is possible. And we'll just be setting ourselves up for the same old stuff. I hope I'm wrong. Email me if you want to, BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com, on Twitter, @BobbyGameDay. Hey, a couple other final things. If you want to play football, I mean play football. Anybody can talk about football from the peanut gallery. Anybody can critique. You want to buckle a chin strap. Training camp is opening for our area's semi-pro football team, 18 and over. And it's football, not flag football. You can play the Dunedin Pirates. Go to DunedinPirates.com. Andy Villamarzo, good friend of mine. You get in touch with him through the website, and we can get you out there. It's not very expensive, a couple hundred bucks. I think it's like $250. Don't quote me on that. But you know what? I'll give you a Joe Bucks fan discount. If anybody comes in and wants to play football, whatever he says the price is, don't worry about it. Tell him I said it's $250. And you got to supply a helmet and shoulder pads, and they'll give you everything else. And you're good to go, friend. You can play a little ball. If you played in high school, want to try and see what it's like to get out there again, I have an absolute blast doing it. And I haven't gotten at least seriously injured yet. But anyway, check that out, DunedinPirates.com. The bye week is upon us. Enjoy it. You know, take this chance to not be really angry for a few hours on Sunday, which is nice. And at least we got it out of the way early this past Sunday. And in the meantime, as always, get in touch with me if you want. BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com, on Twitter, @BobbyGameDay. If you still want a fridge schedule, and hats off to you if you do, if you still want a Bucks fridge schedule, color logos and all that stuff, I can still email you the file. It's just a Word document. I'll email it to you. You can print it out, put it on your fridge. Just email me, BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com. And with all that said, I want to thank the Joes for putting me on the air, as always. I am incredibly grateful for this platform and the chance to be on in front of all of you, the number one place on the internet for Bucks coverage anywhere. Thanks to our good friends at Bill Curry Ford, your sponsor of the Free Stretch. Check them out, BillCurryFord.com, or 1.5 miles north of the stadium on Dale Mabry Highway. And most of all, thanks to all of you for listening. I really appreciate it. Stick with it. I know I kind of got on a downward spiral today, but it's going to get better, and it's still fun. It's still football. And, you know, like I said, it's not like your whole life's on the line here. Just enjoy it for what it is. And we'll take a bye week. We'll come back. We had to clear that negativity out of our system. I promise a much more positive show next week as we get set for the Bucks to take on the Titans. But until then, be safe, have fun, have a great weekend. I'll talk to you next week. And wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.